This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Many years ago, when my children were little, I came up with three inventions to amuse parents like myself, overwhelmed by the amazing volume of products available for tots. My ideas? Baby toupees, training teeth, and the all-terrain stroller. Well, if I'd actually manufactured that all-terrain stroller, I'd be rich today. These days, strollers can cost $1,000, and in a world where baby stores offer 20,000 different items, who knows, there could be a market for baby toupees as well. And that's just stuff. There are all kinds of new services for baby, too. You can hire a sleep consultant, a potty trainer. You can hire someone to teach your kid to sign so he or she can communicate before they learn to speak. A new book asks, when did raising children become parenting? And when did it become big business? Later on in the program, why you may want to conserve your willpower. Turns out, it's a very, very hard to enforce discipline on more than one behavior at a time. But first, if you're a parent, how do you choose among the galaxies of goods and services available for your baby, which are indispensable, which are egregiously frivolous? Tell us your story, 800-989-8255. You can join the conversation on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation or send us email. We have a challenge for you today, an email challenge. What's the most indulgent thing you've ever got for your child that actually turned out to be useful? Email address is talk@npr.org. Pamela Paul is a mother herself, a journalist too, and the author of Parenting Inc. She joins us from our bureau in New York. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Thanks for having me.
And people who've not had a child in the last 15 years or so may not know what we're talking about. Give us an example. In the index of your book, the item with more entries than any other is the stroller. What does a modern parent encounter when they set out to buy a stroller?
Well, in 2003, the average stroller cost $170, and common wisdom among stroller manufacturers was, you know, you can't possibly charge more than $300. And then we became bugaboozled. Bugaboo entered the scene, and they basically made a very smart decision, which was to debut the $800 stroller on Sex and the City. These $800 bugaboos then became a huge phenomenon nationwide. And now you have dozens of models that retail more than $300. And basically what they thought was, they realized, you know, that women today spend $200 or $300 on a pair of shoes. So, you know, you're going to put your precious infant in, you know, something that you spend less, you know, you spend more money on a pair of shoes than what you're going to ride your child around in for years.
And there was another question you asked rhetorically in the book. Is it okay to have just two strollers?
Yeah, well, strollers really are the new car. So just like
they're more expensive.
They're more expensive, and you've got more of them. You've got your jogging stroller, your sort of go around town stroller, your upscale stroller, your, you know, running to catch the bus stroller.
I was just looking at an ad in Parents Magazine. They call this section Goodie Bag, Must See, Must Do, Must Have this month. And they advise us that we can downsize our diaper bags. Sometimes you don't need a shoulder and a giant tote of stuff. This stylish little diaper purse holds up to six nappies and neatly organizes your baby must-have so there's no fumbling around in a cavernous bag for what you need. Bonus genius invention, a clever built-in wipes dispenser, all for the low, low price of $38. You could also use a plastic bag from the grocery store.
Absolutely. I mean, now you have, you know, your evening purse version of a diaper bag. People have, you know, multiple diaper bags. I mean, really, you could just use a tote bag.
And all of these things, of course, well, you know, on some level, you got to carry your diapers around in something. Nevertheless, this may turn out to be useful. But there are all these services available, too. And you write that many parents have now come to believe that to do it themselves would require an art shop worth of supplies and formal training, that they to give their kids a chance in the world that they're going to live in, they have to start them in classes as soon as what, 4 months old?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, what happens is there's this kind of tyranny of that's a combination of competition and this anxiety of underspending that, you know, how can you skimp on spending something for your child? Because I think what's happened is that in our parenting consumer culture, caring for your child has often become translated into buying something for your child. And there's this idea that, well, if I abstain and all these other kids are going to Gymboree and music together and they're learning baby sign language, well, then what does that mean for my kid? You know, is my kid going to fall behind?
Yeah, you open your book with your husband and yourself arguing with yourselves about this idea. Should you spend the money to have your baby learn sign?
Yeah. And, you know, the idea behind it, I mean, there are many reasons that the baby and signing industry will tell you that you should have your babies learn how to sign before they can talk, enrolling them in a class at 7 or 8 months. One of the reasons they give is that you will eliminate frustration. But if you think about that, I mean, why eliminate frustration? You know, why? You know, they say, well, your 9-month-old is sitting there, you know, going blah, 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 and you don't know if they're, you know, they're constipated or if their diaper needs changing. And so, you know, supposedly you can teach them signs that will enable them to tell you what it is they want. But why do you want to eliminate frustration? I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm frustrated every day. You know, being frustrated is something human beings have to learn to deal with. And out of that comes resourcefulness and invention and motivation. And so I don't know why we would want to not have our children learn how to deal with that.
And as long as they can't communicate, parents can indulge the idea that inside that chrome dome, some profound thoughts are rattling around in there, only to realize when their children do learn to communicate that these are pretty basic urges that they're thinking about.
Right. And the thing is if you're sitting there and you're teaching them baby sign language, okay, and you're occupying them with all of that, it's as if we think that parent, you know, babies are on this sort of one-track path to, you know, cognitive development, to speaking aloud, whereas they might in that time be busy just, you know, figuring out that if you put a cup on a table, it doesn't sink through and fall to the floor. And, you know, that's what they need to be doing during that time.
We're talking with Pamela Paul. Her book is Parenting Inc., How We Are Sold on $800 Strollers, Fetal Education, Baby Sign Language, Sleeping Coaches, Toddler Couture, and Diaper Wipe Warmers, and What It All Means for Our Children. 800-989-8255. If you'd like to join us, email talk at npr.org. Lindy's on the line, calling from Sioux City in Iowa.
Hi, how you doing today?
Very well, thanks.
Good. I just wanted to talk about some of the expensive things that you buy for your child. I did buy the wipe warmer, and you think that you need them, and it turns out it's just more for the parents. And I used that wipe warmer twice and didn't use it again. She's more interested in not, you know, fancy toys and nice clothes and matching bedding. She just wants to play with my...
I'm sorry, I think we lost the line there.
Hello?
Well, you know...
Oh, Lindy, you're still there. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I guess... no, I just wanted to... Do I need to start over? I'm sorry.
That's okay. Thanks very much.
Well, what's fascinating is that a lot of that bedding that you buy for your baby is actually unsafe. I mean, they sell you these bedding sets with, you know, beautiful little bumblebee coordinated bumpers and quilts, and, you know, then you have sleep positioners and all these things that actually make the crib less safe. You know, all your kid needs is a bottom sheet.
Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. And this is, let's go to Colleen. Colleen with us from Elgin, Illinois.
Hi there. How are you guys doing today?
Pretty good.
Okay. I am a stay-at-home mom of four, and I started out my life being a single mom. So to me, it meant a whole lot to not have all that extra stuff. And one of the things that we started doing in the last few years was we asked for no more toys for birthdays. We asked for markers and paper and crayons and modeling clay and books. And that's all we get, because otherwise, when my kids get those toys that they see on TV, they sit in the corner and they get ruined and pieces get lost and the playroom gets trashed and nobody's creative and nobody's having fun.
I think you may have formed your own marketing department.
It's been great now that we've scaled back on toys and all those other things. They play outside more. They watch less TV, and there's a lot less gimme, gimme, gimme.
You know, American children get an average of 70 new toys a year, so I think that's far from necessary.
70 times four, I would go nuts. I would go completely insane.
Well, you do get the mountain of stuffed animals.
Oh, actually, we put a moratorium on stuffed animals after baby number two. We said, no more stuffed animals. You have to ask us specifically if you'd like to bring us one, because I have 6 extra super large space bags full of them, and I can't bring myself to pitch them.
Hey, I've still got a couple of Alfs lying around somewhere if you want them, but thanks very much for the call, Colleen. Let's see if we can go now to Audrey. Audrey with us from Fort Myers in Florida.
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
I just wanted to make a comment, although I'm listening about Pamela's book, and I have a 4-month-old and a 6-year-old, so I'm interested in picking that up. But you said you should have marketed the toupee, and I still think that might not be a bad idea, because my six-year-old, when she was about 6 months old, competed in pageants, and I actually ran into a few moms who had put the little fake hair pieces on their daughters.
They're going to hear from my lawyers.
You should. It was shocking, but somehow, you know, they grew enormously long hair at 6 months, and that was why. So the toupee might not have been a bad idea if you're interested in pageants.
Pamela Paul, do you think this guy idea's got some legs?
You know what? If they can sell a TP saver, which they have in droves, which is a little device so that your kid doesn't unfurl the toilet paper, and then I think that, you know, you've got yourself a business.
Baby Toupees Incorporated. Audrey, you're going to be my partner, okay?
Okay, great.
Thanks very much for the call. The things seem ridiculous, but some of them turn out to be actually useful. I mean, again, a diaper bag, you don't have to spend $38 for your evening bag version of a diaper bag, but you got to carry your diapers in something.
Well, you know, I think that what businesses have done is they've really, it's very smart. They've come up for, you know, something to address any parent's, you know, possible momentary worry, anxiety, fear, twinge, desire, you know, hope for their children. If you have, you know, a four-month-old who isn't sitting up properly, there are about five different, you know, baby seat, sitting encourager sort of seats that you can buy to put your kid in to help them sit upright.
And a lot of this is motivated by fear, isn't it?
Absolutely. You know, I think that underlying, I mean, there are a lot of social and cultural reasons why this is happening now, and I go into that in the book. But, you know, some of it is, I think, an underlying economic insecurity. I think that this generation of parents really feels like they are not going to be able to necessarily provide for their children in the way that their own parents did for them. And there's a fear that the world has grown increasingly competitive, that jobs are unstable, that getting into college is impossible. And, you know, parents want help.
College, preschool, getting into preschool is impossible. We'll talk more with Pamela Paul in just a moment. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. Stay with us. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The world of parenting is crowded with gizmos and expensive services. The lowly car seat has become a throne. Baby-proofing has become an industry. If you want your kid to start tutoring really early, hire a trainer, a toilet trainer. We're talking with Pamela Paul this hour. Her book is called Parenting Inc. She says spending a lot on children isn't just unnecessary. It can often be counterproductive. You can read an excerpt from her book, Parenting Inc., at our website, npr.org/talk, and we want to hear from you. Have you felt pressured to outfit your baby in Burberry shoes or $1,000 strollers? Give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also share your story with us on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. Let's get another caller on the line. Michael's with us. Michael calling from Davis in California.
Yes, hello. I just wanted to call and defend not so much of the stuff, but baby signs in particular. I've actually worked at the Child Development Center where the psychologist, one of the psychologists who developed baby signs, tested it out. And I found that it was very useful in reducing frustration, like you know, the author was saying, for babies, but also for parents. Very helpful in getting what it is that your child really wants so that you're not as frustrated, which is something that all parents deal with quite a bit.
Pamela Paul, I know you looked into it a little bit and came found some other conclusions that said the record on teaching children American Sign Language was mixed at best.
Yeah, mixed at best. I mean, there are obviously for children that are hearing impaired or otherwise have, you know, learning challenges, there can be benefits. But for children who are, you know, fully healthy and have full hearing ability, there really are minimal benefits. And, you know, I understand I have two kids under three, so I understand parents need to minimize frustration. But, you know, part of me just thinks, well, you know, raising kids is difficult. It's messy. It's tough. They get hurt. It's hard. And, you know, yes, you want to minimize some of it, but a lot of it is just, you know, part of the job. And I don't think that most classes and products are really the thing to eliminate that.
Hmm. Yeah, I understand what you're saying. You know, it is definitely part of the job. I think especially the classes are a little bit much. If you're interested in it, you know, a simple book on baby signs or something like that is much easier. It's not
yes.
expensive.
Although, you know, all the research that's out there that shows benefits, which also, in fact, are disputable, but the research that does show the benefits is all on with parents who were specially trained to teach baby sign language. And there's no research that shows that parents who've been trained by books or DVDs have been able to get, you know, some of the alleged benefits from baby signing.
Right. Yeah. I'm definitely in the experience of the people who've been trained, since I was one of the people that helped, you know, teach them at the place where it was developed.
Pamela Paul also points out that to do this, you're going to have to teach your babysitter how to read sign as well.
That's true. Although they're pretty obvious and easy if the baby gets going with them.
Babies are a lot smarter than me. Thanks very much, Michael.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
It's just interesting that I think that there are a lot of things that babies learn naturally that we just don't need a product or service to teach them. I mean, they have vision-stimulating mobiles in order to, you know, help your child see. Well, you know, I think that before these mobiles were invented, children somehow managed.
I was also interested in the idea of baby coaches, and having heard that phrase for the first time sort of out of context, I imagined a gruff man standing over a very small baby saying, "Drool! You call that a drool?" But in fact, baby coaching is about other things.
Yeah, I mean, there are actually a huge range of services that parents can get to sort of help them out. And I was really prepared, I have to tell you, to disparage a lot of these things. I thought, you know, who are these people that are taking advantage of vulnerable parents and, you know, selling them on all these services? In fact, I think actually a lot of them are pretty useful, and I think the money is better spent. I mean, you're better spent spending $300 to have a sleeping coach help you and your entire family get some sleep for a full year than you are spending $3,000 on a crib, you know, in which your baby's just going to cry, you know, for hours on end.
Mm. Here's an email we got from Steve in Tucson, Arizona. I laughed out loud at your topic today. My wife and I will celebrate our twins' son's first birthday on Sunday. Our most indulgent purchase was the wipe warmer. I initially believed this was a step below baby spa treatment. I am firmly convinced now, however, that it prevented our getting peed on more than once. Warm is good, despite what an early caller suggested that it was more for the parents. Separately, my wife and I spend a combined $1,000 on three strollers, one that accepted both their infant car seats, a small around-town version, and the all-terrain vehicle. Everyone worth the money. What would your guests suggest for first birthday gifts? We're struggling with all the battery-powered whiz-bangs that we see in the toy store. Any ideas for him?
Well, you know, I've got to say, after the first birthday for my older daughter, we eliminated birthday presents. I think one great idea is a book exchange where people, you know, everyone brings a book and everybody, you know, gift wraps, and every child goes home with a new book or even, you know, a book from your collection. But I really think that in terms of toys, that the best thing is toys that are 90% child, 10% toys. Get rid of the batteries, get rid of the buttons. Children learn nothing new there.
Let's talk with Brian. Brian with us from Lewis in Delaware.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
I'm just remembering my wife and I with my first child, my son, when he was born, standing in the Babies R Us safety aisle and just thinking, wow, I didn't ever think of that. And gladly we didn't get hooked into the sort of the paranoia, I guess, and kept it basic. But it's just sort of overwhelming as a first-time parent. My second child, my daughter now, she's 6 months, you know, at this point it's just, you know, a nook falls on the floor, it's all right, don't even have to clean it, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But it's a drastic, you know, change at first when you're a new parent. It's frightening, to be honest.
You confronted the wall of death, which, you know, is in every baby emporium. It's like 10,000 products to, you know, pad every surface of your home, and your child, you know, otherwise your child will be, you know, imperiled at every turn.
Yeah, as a first-time parent, again, many years ago, I think this was even before baby monitors were widespread, I was afraid my wife and I would not be able to hear our child cry from the next room, so I installed a microphone, being in radio, a microphone through an amplifier into speakers in my room, little realizing that I could have heard my baby cry from Bayonne.
Yeah, it's overwhelming in many different ways. It's like now it's down to just simply the wall outlets, get those covered, got the car seat, obviously, that's that thing, and the gate at the top of the steps, and we're golden.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, the number one thing that when I talk to parents about their experience going into a Bye Bye Baby or a Babies R Us for the first time, the word that they most commonly used was overwhelmed. And 8 out of 10 told me that they left the store without registering because they were so panic-stricken.
I can definitely relate to that.
Brian, thanks very much.
Thank you.
So long. Pamela, how big is this industry?
Oh, well, you know, the mom market is said to be a $1.7 trillion market. And, you know, you could – all the figures are really astounding. The upscale baby market is $45 billion worldwide. You know, sales of infant and toddler clothing on luxury brands is $33.3 billion. You know, there's just huge amounts of spending. The baby registry building is now a $240 million business. American women are having an average of 3 baby showers now. I mean, baby showers have surpassed wedding showers as sort of the blowout gift-giving occasion.
And let me go to the other end of the economic equation. And what you point out at the beginning of your book, a lot of parents now have to sit down and decide whether they can afford a child.
Oh, definitely. I mean, when I talk to parents, they are making that decision for the first and the second child, you know, never mind, let alone the third child, which is sort of seen as this luxury height, based on how much money they make. I mean, a lot of parents feel like, well, you know, not only do they end up putting off childbearing until they're in their 30s because they're not making enough money.
Let's get Bill on the line. Bill is with us from Wauseon. Am I pronouncing that right, in Ohio?
Yes, you are, Neil.
Go ahead, please.
Yes. I'd like to throw in the grandparents' perspective for a moment, if I may. We raised 2 kids without all of this and did quite well.
I'm sure you did, but I'm sure your grandparents were saying, you know, we didn't have all these fancy modern things.
Oh, I know. But they, of course, they weren't saying it in English. But anyway, I find it rather amusing, because we now have 3 grandchildren, wonderful, but the difference from the first to the third, the first grandchild, wrapped in that envelope of protection, the third one, you're tough, shake it off.
Well, the way I always heard it was, your first kid, you drop a cookie on the floor, you pick it up, throw it away, and you give the kid a new cookie. Second kid, you pick up the cookie and scrape it off a little bit and then hand it to the kid. And the third kid, you just kick it over to him.
Right.
You know, I talked to a lot of...
On the issue of the stroller thing, my daughter bought a stroller that holds all 3 kids at once. And no one else can use the sidewalk. It's huge. Well, I don't know how you would ever transport it from one place to another without a half-ton pickup.
Well, they sell that too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I talked to a lot of grandparents, and they really echoed what you're saying. And I think that, you know, that ends up, you know, ironically causing a lot of parents to overspend, because they figure, you know, their parents don't even know what any of this is. So their parents can't really give them advice about, you know, oh, you need the number one nipple versus the number two nipple versus, you know, the bouncy seat and the you know, jumperoo, because they didn't have any of this stuff. So parents are really sort of left grappling around blind.
But Bill, to be fair, aren't granddads and grandmas the source of a lot of this problem, because, well, they've got a little disposable income, and, well, that kid is just so precious.
Yeah, they do. They do. And you just fight back the urge. If I may, in closing, then I'll get off and let somebody else talk. But I spent 30 years in education, and we are not doing children any favors if we don't teach them to deal with frustration and deal with boredom. Because if they don't know how to deal with them, then they act out in socially unacceptable ways.
You know, I'll just add that grandparents now buy 1 in every 4 toys and 4 in every 10 baby books.
Bill? Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, we're probably heavy on the books. Granny definitely is heavy on the books. We probably supply them with more of that than toys.
Thanks for the call, Bill.
Thank you.
And just in general, I don't mean Bill in particular, but do we tend to over-romanticize the past when things were easier when we lived in our log cabins?
Oh, yeah. I mean, of course. Can you imagine life without the sippy cup? I mean, I dread
no.
to think, you know, how did people get by?
I can't imagine my floor without the sippy cup.
You know, any woman who nurses their baby, the idea of getting by with an electric, you know, and works, the idea of getting by without an electric breast pump is, you know, you may as well, you know, be, I don't know, like a sow on a farm.
Our guest is Pamela Paul. Her book is Parenting, Inc., How We're Sold on $800 Strollers, Fetal Education, Baby Sign Language, Sleeping Coaches, Toddler Couture, and Diaper Wipe Warmers, and What It Means for Our Children. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. And this is Talk of the Nation, coming to you from NPR News. Let's go to Michael. Michael calling from Hickory, North Carolina. Michael, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
I have two things, one to add to the problem and one to fix the problem or help the problem. I have four boys, and in every situation that we go to visit someone with other kids, they're always fascinated by their toys. It doesn't matter if they have them. It doesn't matter what they are, what condition they're in. They just are fascinated because they're different toys. And so I've got an idea for everybody in the United States to just share their toys, to just swap toys every Christmas instead of buying new toys.
Hmm.
Just get with your neighbors and have them give you 10 of their toys, and you give them 10 of your toys, and the kids will be just as happy.
Up to a certain age, I think you're right about that, but go ahead.
And you got to put them in a box, though, because that's half the fun on Christmas morning.
And lots of paper, yeah.
And another toy that, or the idea to make things worse is, I came up with this when I had they were smaller, is Velcro baby clothes.
Velcro fasteners on baby clothes? Those are pretty common, aren't they, Pamela?
Oh, absolutely. Well, and Velcro on baby diapers, too, now. Cloth diapers.
Well, I was thinking more of the whole clothes, because that way you can put a whole swatch up on the wall and put them in timeout. You just stick them on the wall.
That's different.
And then, you know, you'd have
to have
the restaurants go along with it and have a little Velcro chair that you could stick the kid in so they don't crawl around the restaurant all over the place.
Yeah, the problem, Velcro is good, but, you know, the problem is they're really a lot stronger than they look. If they understood leverage, we'd be all in big trouble. But thanks, Michael, for the call. Here's an email from Sheila in Los Angeles. Our biggest indulgence turned out to be more useful than we imagined. It was a video camera. We wanted to get video of our trip to China when we picked up our little adopted baby girl. As first-time parents, we had no idea what it'd be like to watch her learn and grow and develop and become her own little person. Being able to document this for us, our parents, and our families and her, hopefully she'll appreciate it, has been a wonderful gift. It really did feel like an indulgence at the time. Now we wish she had cameras mounted in every room to catch her every moment. And an editing program will also probably come in handy, too.
Well, you know, you can now actually hire an Academy Award-winning documentarian to create your baby home movie for you. For a price.
For a price, of course.
$5,000.
$5,000?
Yep.
Let's see if we can get Alan on the line. Alan calling us from Sacramento.
Hi, good morning. How are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Hey, my wife and I are both attorneys. We had two kids. My daughter came first, and then 18 months later came my son. And we wanted the best, of course, because we were later in life having kids for everything, you know. So books were bought, audio tapes, the whole nine yards. And then it came time for my daughter to be potty trained. So my wife's like, I got the daughter, you got the son. So, okay. So she read every book she could. She talked to her friends. She did all sorts of good stuff. And after lots of research and so on, she potty trained my daughter. It took 3 months. She said, from all the research I've read, sons take a lot longer. So good luck with our son. My son turned 2. I took him in to the daycare center. I explained that I wanted to potty train him as a start this weekend because he turned 2. I said, great. They said, come in tomorrow, bring 2 pair of underwear. So, okay. So I brought 3 pair of underwear the next day, dropped him off, picked him up at about 3 o'clock, and they said, he's done. So what do you mean? He's body trained. What do you mean? I haven't read any of the books. I didn't do the tapes. I'm supposed to do something else, aren't I? No. He was worried about being embarrassed, so he just potty trained himself. He's all done. Enjoy your weekend. And he never had an accident after that. So our conclusion from that was sometimes they just figure it out on their own.
Sometimes they just figure it out on their own. And it turns out we've probably been doing this for tens of thousands of years. Who knew?
It was amazing. I mean, it was a difference. And that's a great story for us at parties because we have a lot of friends who are younger lawyers who are raising their kids, and they want all the books to this. I mean, we had a library that was huge I gave my sister. Probably 25 different books on the life cycle of the 2-year-old.
Alan, thanks very much for the call, and good luck with the kids.
Thanks. They're wonderful. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you. And Pamela, we just have a few seconds left, but given the impetus of this industry, do you expect things to slow down at all?
Well, no. I mean, I tried to provide here an annotated roadmap so that, you know, the mom that's going into Babies R Us sort of, you know, has a little bit more of a guideline and some information about how, you know, the way things work. But I think that parents are going to go on loving and caring and wanting the best for their kids and spending on them accordingly.
Pamela Paul, thanks very much for your time today, and good luck with your kids.
Thank you so much.
Pamela Paul's book is Parenting, Inc., How We're Sold on $800 Fetal Education, Baby Sign Language, Sleeping Coaches, Toddler Culture, and Diaper Wipe Warmers, and What It Means for Our Children. Coming up, if you're having trouble balancing your budget, maybe you should quit that diet. We'll explain. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.